If you have visited the UW Arboretum in Madison, you know what a gem it is. And if you haven't had the opportunity to get there, I'm betting there's a good chance after this program you'll be paying it a visit. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along for another edition of Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. And great to have back Molly Fifield-Murray. She's the Outreach Programs Manager at the UW Arboretum in Madison. And Molly, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today.
It's always great to be here, and we have a beautiful spring that has not been too fast, not been too slow, just right.
Just right, and there's some beautiful bushes out there right now at the Arboretum that are smelling pretty darn nice.
That's right. Well, we have one of the most extensive crabapple collections in the country, and a very complete lilac collection, quite large also, and the crab apples are in full bloom. The lilacs are just starting. So the next couple of weeks is quite a treat for folks. And, of course, the woodland native wildflowers have been very nice and haven't gotten blown off real quickly. So you can still see them in the Galistel and Wingrow woods.
We want to talk with you about sustainable gardening, native plants, really, today. And I know the native plant sale is this weekend. It's a great tradition, especially as it falls on Mother's Day weekend. And how would you say interest in using native plants in our landscape has evolved over time?
Well, I think people are much more sophisticated with it and understand it. I don't hear as many people having neighbor complaints, although that still happens. I think a lot of people understand that native landscaping can be anywhere from looking just like a perennial garden to being a whole yard. But even then, it's not really a threat to somebody's manicured lawn. No. In fact, it's a very, very healthy kind of yard to have. And, of course, the native plant sale has been going for more than 20 years on the Saturday before Mother's Day. And they sell out of their plants by the end of the by 2 o'clock, it's gone.
It's all
so for the most part.
From nine to two.
Come early, get in line, and make sure you can get. If you want something very, very specific, it's important to come early in the morning. You don't have to be there right at nine necessarily, but come before noon if you want to get exactly what you want.
And you're
going to
find native grasses and woodland prairie and savanna plants?
You find everything from deep maple woods, wildflowers, to full sun, to even some wetland plants, not necessarily arrowwood or some of the thing, arrow plant. What is that?
Arrowwood?
That grows in the water.
Oh, it'll come.
Sorry I brought it up.
But also, are trees and shrubs part of it, too?
Yes, they have trees and shrubs. One of the ones they have right now is a really fun one, buttonbush. And it has really round, about smaller than a golf ball, but that shape, with little tiny flowers all over it. And it's very much loved by the bumblebees.
Oh, so that's going to attract bees to your area, then.
It will, and it blooms in the summer. So sometimes one problem that's in sort of shady gardens is a lot of the blooming is in the spring. So it's nice to have something that blooms in summer.
You know, we mentioned prairie and woodland and savanna, and maybe you could describe those are great habitats. And maybe talk about each one of those for us.
Well, the thing that separates them for gardeners, for the most part, is the amount of shade.
Hmm.
So full sun would be prairie plants, partial shade would be savanna plants, and full shade would be woodland plants. And those can be either for oak woods or maple woods for the most part. Partial shade being under one oak tree instead of a whole woods, or some woodland plants that we think are shade adapted really aren't shade adapted. They're adapted to sun in the spring. So a lot of the woodland wildflowers that are commonly known, like Spring Beauty or Dutchman's Breeches, cannot go in the shade of a house, for instance, because the house doesn't shed its leaves. So those wildflowers are trying to do all of their work in 6 weeks before the leaves come on the maple trees or the oak trees, and can't go on the north side of a house or building shade, but they are good for deciduous shade.
Hmm. Talking with Molly Fifield Murray, Outreach Programs Coordinator and Manager for the UW Arboretum, as we visit with her about native plants today. If you have questions, I haven't given the number yet. Let me do that right now. Call us at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@WPR.org, or you can post on our Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and you can post your questions or your comment there. I have an email from Zach. A couple of questions. It says, I have about a half acre of yard sod that I want to turn into native prairie for habitat and less mowing. What's the best way and time to get rid of the sod and plant, and then go ahead and plant seed and prairie plants? And the best way, you know, depending, I mean, sometimes you can just have it, you can roll it up.
That's right. If it is sod that was put down as sod, you can roll it up and just plant. I would not recommend bringing in topsoil if you've done that, because prairie plants are adapted to a wide variety of soils, and frequently topsoil that's brought in will have weed seeds in it or just favor weeds. So if it is actual sod, you can cut it and roll it up. If it's planted lawn by seed or something, you have to get rid of the turf first, which you can do by smothering it. You wouldn't smother a whole half acre, but you could do it in parts with either black plastic or landscape fabric. You could till it and till it a couple of times to get rid of the weeds. And actually, if it has weeds, you would stimulate that seed to germinate, and then you would till it again. So I would say it takes about one growing season to prepare the site, unless you can just roll up the sod. One thing I recommend is if you're in a neighborhood where your neighbors have lawns, I would not take the prairie right up to the edge. I would leave a mower's width or two adjacent to the neighbor's yard so that it's not an abrupt transition. And you can also, at the beginning at least, try to choose the species that you're planting so that aesthetically for you and for the neighbor, it doesn't go from a 2-inch lawn to 12-foot big blue stem.
There you go. You know, Zach also had, he also has 3 acres of cropland, formerly corn, he wants to do the same thing with. He wants to turn that into prairie. He said he asked the farmer to plant soybeans this year because he read that soybeans draw chemicals out of the soil and are recommended prior to planting a prairie. And after this year's harvest, what is the best way and time to convert to prairie?
Well, that's actually easier.
That is, yeah.
Because it's been in crops. It's been probably managed for weeds. And so this fall, they could plant to prairie. They would not have to till it deeply. They would maybe just disc it and then spread the seed. You can find either some of the nurseries have tractors with seed, the kind of drill that can put in prairie plants. You could seed it over with a grass mixture and then walk through planting drifts of the wildflowers in various places. You could mix it all together, but sometimes the wildflower portion of the mix is more expensive, and you might want to put certain wildflowers where you can see them better.
Yeah.
It's probably a good idea to figure out where you're going to walk and think about planting special plants where you're going to have a trail or have a curve in the trail so that you have some focal points. Maybe a compass plant or something like that, that your path curves around if you're walking through that.
That's great advice. That's great. And but sounds like, boy, Zach, send some pictures when
yeah,
when that prairie had 3 acres. That's one. That's a nice size. Dan in Wisconsin Dells Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hello there.
What's on your mind?
I live on the Wisconsin River, and I rent a house, and I moved in a year ago, December. Well, all last summer, I mowed in front right along the river there. Unknown to me, the previous year, they planted all native plants along the river, and I mowed the whole summer long. I just want to know, are they going to be able to come back this year without a problem?
Well, it depends on whether they came up and got cut off so many times that they don't have any energy left in the root system, but you can try it and see. Some native plants have incredible capacity to come back from the root system. So it depends on how long they had been planted there. And, you know, they might have been right under the mower height, maintaining some energy gathering capacity, some leaves. And so it might, give it a try, and you'll see what happens.
Okay, yeah, I usually mow about four inches. I learned that from the Larry Muir show, too.
Well,
and I have one other thing. Larry, about a month ago, I was driving down the road, and a turkey crossed the road. And when it went up on the embankment, there was a deer standing there, and the deer looked down at the turkey, and it looked like he said, "Come on, buddy, let's go." And it was one of the neatest things in nature I have ever seen. And the minute I saw it, it's like, I got to call Larry now.
That sounds so cool. I was going to tell you, Dad, I had another friend who was observed a turkey and a deer playing with each other. The deer would kind of run up to the turkey and then run back. And then the turkey would kind of go after the deer a little bit, and they were playing with each other.
It is one of the coolest things in nature to see. I just want to say I love your show, and I don't miss it. And have a great day.
All right. Dan, thank you so much. Appreciate the call and the great story.
Right.
A wonderful story. We have Dave in Darien next. Dave, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. We'd like to obtain a plant for a friend of ours whose mother passed away. We wanted to plant something in her honor. And what she's requested, what she's given us, is she's got an area that's partial sun, partial shade. She was hoping for a shrub with yellow flowers. Does mm-hmm. anything come to mind?
Yes, what comes to mind is Dyervilla lanicera, which is dwarf bush honeysuckle. It's a native plant. It's not the invasive honeysuckle. It grows maybe 3 to 4 feet tall, depending on how much the rabbits have trimmed it over the winter. It has yellow flowers over arching canes. They're branches, but they sort of arch like a cane of blackberry or something, but they don't have thorns. It can tolerate some sun and not you know, not hemlock shade, but it doesn't get too tall, so that's a very nice thing about it.
Yeah, it's pretty. Flowers are pretty.
Flowers are quite pretty, yellow.
That sounds beautiful. Dwarf bush honeysuckle would be the best way to ask for it, or could you spell for me the actual name?
The Latin name is Dyervilla, Dyervilla, and I don't think they've changed it on us recently, so I'm pretty sure that's the genus name. But dwarf bush honeysuckle, the native, is what you want.
And specify native.
Yes.
Yes, for sure. Dave, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Our guest today, Molly Fifield-Murray, Outreach Programs Manager for the UW Arboretum in Madison. I'm Larry Mueller. Cheyenne Lentz, our on-air producer, today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for Garden Talk. Thanks for joining us for this edition of Garden Talk as we visit with Molly Fifield-Murray about native plants, and really great to have her along talking about the annual Arboretum Native Plant Sale on Saturday. This weekend, it's a great tradition, especially since it falls on Mother's Day weekend every every year. And you actually, we were talking about a plant that you guys are going to be selling actually at the sale.
Right. So Dave from Darien, if he's still listening, could go to the sale to get that dwarf bush honeysuckle. And there are other native plants. Another nice short shrub that's not used very much in landscaping but is quite beautiful is New Jersey tea. And it only gets 3 feet tall, can tolerate partial shade, maybe not as dense as the dwarf bush honeysuckle. But they have that. They have the button bush that we mentioned earlier and a lot of other shrubs.
And that's 9 to 2, right?
9 to 2 Saturday.
Yes. Yep. And Deirdre in Verona, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. And by the way, I love that prairie sale in the Arboretum. I've been there a couple of years, and the volunteers are just so helpful, too, in answering questions.
Thank you.
Everybody has fun.
Yeah. So I have a couple of questions. One is that I've been working on gradually trying to restore some prairie in my front yard, and that's been great. I worked with Neil Zabal and Westfield Nurseries, who, by the way, are a wonderful resource if you can't get it all at the Arboretum sale. But my backyard, where I haven't wanted to use any weed killer, is just slowly getting taken over by a lot of creeping Charlie and dandelions. It's got some shade from oaks, and then a lot of it is just sunlight. Is there anything that would be the kind of aggressive enough native cover that I could start feeding in there that might start to crowd out those other things that, like, wildlife and birds would like and would be, you know, somewhat nice to look at?
Yeah.
How tall are you willing to go?
I know there's, it's Verona, and I know there are some restrictions. I don't think I can have grass or shrubbery or things more than a foot high, but I'd be willing to trim it, or maybe it wouldn't be in all parts of the garden. I do have some things in the back, and I'm planning to put something in the center, some native plants, but just I'm realizing everything around that area, unless I really spend a lot of time at it, is going to get completely taken over by these other weeds.
Well, in Verona, there are some very nice prairie gardens, even right in the front yard. There's one on Aspen Court that mm-hmm. you could go by and look at to see what they've done. It's not restricted by height in that particular area that I know of. Now, that yard has prairie drop seed as the major grass, a little mm-hmm. bit of side oats grama, and a little blue stem. So those are the three grasses. They don't get very tall, but more than a foot for the little
okay.
blue stem. And then the wildflowers in that garden are things like coreopsis and purple coneflower, the Echinacea pallida, butterfly weed, pasque flowers, prairie smoke, asters, something that would compete and do well in the partial shade is, it's false sunflower, it's Heliopsis, and it gets probably waist high, but it's a yellow sunflower kind of flower.
And if I planted clumps of those things, I mean, would they gradually crowd out these other, because I have a pretty big space, it's a pretty big expanse, so I was thinking more I should look at try to find some kind of ground cover.
Well, I think planting a mix of things is good, and mm-hmm. prairie plants are very competitive in the right conditions. This false sunflower, things like bee balm, the grasses. You might not get rid of the Creeping Charlie. It's pretty hard to get rid of Creeping Charlie completely. We've started to appreciate it a little bit more at the Arboretum, not that we plant it, but we don't use poisons on it because it's beloved by bumblebees.
Right, exactly.
And we've started to realize how important having a wide variety of things that flower at different times is important for maintaining the bumblebees. And since at the Arboretum we have an endangered species of bumblebee, anything that we see them on, we try to keep.
Yeah.
Sure. So maybe learn to love the Creeping Charlie.
Yes.
A little, at least
okay.
some of it. Yeah.
Okay. I can do that. All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Deirdre. Appreciate the call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234, talking prairie and native plants today with Molly Fifield-Murray. And, Molly, we had question, weeds came up earlier, and I had an email from Brooke in Eau Claire. I would like to have you have us mention garlic mustard, which is already in flower. And I, by the way, Brooke, I believe, is with the DNR. Folks should pull it before it goes to seed. First year growth is a rosette that sometimes it can be confused with Creeping Charlie or Creeping Jenny. Garlic mustard smells like garlic when pulled or mowed, and it's more lime-colored green, a lighter green than most other yard vegetation. It's an extremely invasive plant, best controlled before it comes established in an area. And this, again, Brooke from the Eau Claire, from the DNR in Eau Claire.
Yes, I deal with garlic mustard at my own property west of Madison. It came in maybe a decade ago when a neighbor about a mile up the road had some forestry work done, and the seeds came in on the machinery, and it has spread probably by deer or squirrels probably deer and squirrels for the most part. It is in flower already, and so but it's just started flowering. So if it's just started flowering, you can pull the plants and sort of shred the top, and you don't need to bag it. If it is starting to set seed, you need to pull it and put it in bags so that the seed doesn't fall off. You can't just leave it lying around. If you see seedlings of it, I think when they're seedlings, sometimes you can almost mistake it for a violet because it has that shaped leaf. But it does smell like garlic.
Yeah.
And what some people do with that is you can rake that or burn it, for that matter, if there aren't any burn bands. Some people even use a very old-fashioned tool, which is a flame weeder.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that was used before herbicides. And is in many ways safer, but you don't want to set the woods on fire. So
be careful.
You have to be careful. Yes, but it's time to pull it. And, you know, you can see it now. If it's established, it's probably about 6 inches to a foot tall, has little white flowers on it, and smells like garlic. And, in fact, there's a pesto recipe for if there hasn't been any spray on it, you can pick it and eat it. So, in fact, that's why it was brought over. It was a culinary herb.
Oh, man. Well, there you have it. And I'm really glad that she sent us that note, because it gave you a chance to talk about it as well. And so, you see, garlic mustard, this is really the time to get rid of it. And, Brooke, again, thank you for that note. Phil in Hebron, Illinois, up next. Phil, hi.
Good morning, you guys. I have a quick question for you. The road commissioner near me last October, November, moved back, 150 yards of the shoulder of the road, took it back 20 feet to the established farm fence. It was totally overgrown. He had to go in with, he used a brush hog, a hydraulic brush hog on a high tractor, and then he had to come back actually with a brush chipper because the grapevine and things like buckthorn were heavy enough that he had to run them through a chipper. He couldn't actually chew them up with his brush hog. Anyway, he took this back and left the chips there. Prior to this, I would say on occasion, you could walk along the road there. If you walked along with a dog, you'd see a May apple, maybe the trifoliate foliage of a trillium or two. But, I mean, nothing really under there. He did this last October to November and left the chips there. It's basically made a mulch. He's trying to kill everything down. It's an established oak hickory area that had undergrowth on it. This spring, the 150 yards has exploded with, I would say, 5,000 May apples and the biggest stand of prairie and Cecil trillium I've ever seen in any one location. The ground is covered with enough established trilliums that it's choking out everything under the trilliums. What's going on? Were there seeds there? Were those plants laying dormant till the conditions changed? Because they weren't there before.
Yes, if they're flowering already, they were dormant. I don't know the length of time that woodland plants can be dormant, but I know that prairie plants during the 1930s drought were shown to be dormant for more than 9 years. So if the buckthorn had been in there for quite a while, they might have been quite small, but not large enough to notice and not large enough to flower. But if they're flowering this year, that means they had a fair amount of energy in the root system, and they basically got released by getting rid of the buckthorn. And we find that in the arboretum when we go in with these brush hogs and get rid of the buckthorn and honeysuckle. It does a number of things. It releases wildflowers like that. It also reduces the tick population, which we're quite pleased to see happen. And it increases the diversity of wildlife because there's more things to eat that are better for them. You know, buckthorn's Latin name is Rhamnus cathartica. And if you look at the droppings of birds in the when they're eating buckthorn berries, you can see that it's going through rather quickly. So it's not the best plant for them. So nesting of birds is better when it's removed, honeysuckle and buckthorn. And even the grapevines, you know, some of the grapevines have become quite vigorous. It's a native plant, but it seems to be doing quite well. And I've heard it suggested that that's because it's taking advantage of the increased carbon in the atmosphere. So.
Mm. Oh, there we go. Thank you so much for that call. By the way, we have open lines. I'll get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. 1-800-642-1234. Let me do it once more. 1-800-642-1234. It's not all that hard to remember, Larry. Give us a call anyway, and we'll be glad to get your question, and Molly will take a crack at answering it. We have a caller, Sharon, from Rhinelander, couldn't stay on the line, but wondered if bumblebee bush is resistant to if deer don't like it.
So she's referring to the button bush, I think, that I mentioned earlier.
Yep.
We have a lot of deer in the arboretum, and they seem to be, the bush seems to survive that. Some other things don't as easily, but yes, it seems to be resistant. In the arboretum where it's growing naturally, it's in places that are a little bit damp, and that's its natural habitat. Now, deer frequent those areas, of course, so I have not seen it pruned down to the ground by deer.
So it's something that you can probably plant with, and hopefully.
Yes.
They're not going to be. It depends on where you're. Oh, it's from Rhinelander, so there's a couple of deer in Rhinelander area.
Well, I suppose there are a few. People don't see them during hunting season, I hear, but yeah.
You know, last week, before you go back to the phones, last week Melinda Myers talked about goof-proof plants for Wisconsin gardens. Are there some native plants that you would put in that category?
Goof-proof meaning if you plant them, they're
going
to grow?
Anybody,
yeah, anybody can do it?
Yeah.
Well, native plants are incredibly resilient, but any plant has to be stuck in the ground at approximately the height and depth that it was being grown in the nursery. Planting native plants by seed is quite easy. You have to be patient because they don't necessarily bloom quickly. Some of them, like Shooting Star, might take 7 years to bloom after you've planted seed from it, but the seed is there and the plant is growing and just has to take enough time to get the energy to bloom. Sometimes you can just take a rake out if you're thinking of planting savanna species and sort of rake the soil, drop some seeds in, and lo and behold, in a few weeks, you might have some of the mints, the native mints coming up right away. So it depends on the species. There are annuals. Mm-hmm. And there are biennials. Columbine is pretty easy to sow from seed and not too hard. It doesn't persist in one spot, but you haven't done something bad to it. It's that's just the way it is. So.
Lee in Green Bay has a question for you. Let's go there. Lee, hi. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, hi, good morning. Yeah, I would just like you to mention, I know you mentioned the invasiveness with the native plants with the garlic mustard, but also there's that common honeysuckle that have the little red berries, and everyone thinks that they're so helpful to the birds. Well, they're not, and they get so invasive, that common honeysuckle.
That's right, and I just mentioned that with the buckthorn, too, but the honeysuckle and buckthorn are equally invasive and equally problematic for the native plants and the native animals. So if you like to see butterflies and the native birds, then you really want diversity in your landscape. And these invasive species, which don't have their natural controls anymore, the natural insects or other things that would be limiting their growth in their native habitat in Asia, that didn't come along with them, and so they are invasive in our woodlands, and they green out a little bit earlier, and they stay green a little bit longer, which makes them easier to find if you want to get rid of them.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Lee. Thank you. Yeah, appreciate the call. Judy in Eau Claire, your turn. Hi, Judy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about milkweed or butterfly weed. I think they're one and the same. Are they?
Butterfly weed is a milkweed, yes.
Okay. Well, I live in the city, and I, of course, have to keep my grass short, but I do have a section on the side of my house where milkweed comes up, and I kind of mow around it. But I'm wondering about what time I should look for that so I can be careful not to cut it down.
Right. Well, milkweed is one of the last things to come up, whether it's butterfly weed or any of the milkweeds. They just sort of bide their time, and I don't know if they're worried. Well, I was about to anthropomorphize them, but I don't know if they're resisting frost, but they don't come up real early. I have not seen my butterfly weed emerge yet.
Okay, so you think more towards...
Well, they'll be coming up in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, okay. I just want to make sure I don't mow them down because I like to have them there for the butterflies and whatnot. So.
Right. Yep. You know, there's a really nice campaign being put forward to plant milkweeds so that monarchs do not go extinct. That would be a horrible thing for our generation to eliminate monarchs by our carelessness. And milkweed is a really important thing to have for monarchs. It's their obligate host for the larva. Another important thing to think about is, though, that when they're migrating, the milkweeds are not in bloom, and what you need when monarchs are migrating are asters and goldenrods for them to nectar on as they fly south.
Oh, asters and goldenrods.
Yes.
Okay, good to know.
All right. Thanks, Judy.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call very much. And more callers online. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Are there some native plants that do well in all parts of Wisconsin? Everywhere?
You mean an individual species that can grow anywhere in Wisconsin?
Yeah.
Well, the common milkweed's probably as close as anything to that. Perhaps New England aster, maybe some of the goldenrods, but they all have their natural communities that they are in. But it's interesting, if you look at John Curtis's vegetation in Wisconsin and some of the early vegetation maps, there were savannas way up into the Ashland area.
Is that right?
And probably coming in after fires had gone through the pine forests. And of course, anywhere there's sandy soil, you have a mixture of oaks and pines of some kind. It could even be jack pine, but you'll have the same sort of sand species, maybe fewer species, but many of them would be the same up north as you would have in Sauk County. Some species drop out as you go north, but you'd have a little blue stem and some other sand species, even the sandy milkweed, the world milkweed. So lupin can grow farther north as well as in southern Wisconsin if it's in sand.
Got a Facebook question from Robbie, who said, my small native prairie garden is being overcome by tiger lilies. Any suggestions on ridding my garden of these vile flowers?
Well, let's see. Tiger lilies. Daylilies, I know, are edible, and you can turn them into tempura. Tiger lilies, I don't know, but lilies are bulbs, so if you can't dig them out right now, you could dig them out in the future and always deadhead them so that they're not producing more seed. But, you know, you see daylilies along the roadsides, and that's mostly they've been spread by the mowers. The seed has been spread by the mowers. So anytime you're trying to get rid of something, the first thing to do is to make sure it doesn't go to seed, and then work on getting rid of the root system, which in the case of lilies is a bulb.
And so good advice there. And we have some more callers online. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. And let's go north to Crandon and Hazel. Hazel, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hello. I'm a Native American, and I'm listening to your station. It's very interesting. But I was wondering if the lady knew that Native Americans eat the milkweed yet.
Any of the species or a certain one?
I don't know. The ones that we pick them before they open up, and they grow pretty wild up here all over. And since I was a little girl, we've always eaten that. And they come in, like, in June, early part of June.
Yes.
Okay. Do you eat the pods or the...
The first buds that come out on top, and then it takes like six cleanings of water, running water, to clean them because there's little insects in there that we have to clean out and drain.
Ah.
But we add sausage with it and potatoes, and it makes for a really good organic soup.
Okay, and the sort of milky substance isn't too bitter, or does that come out in the washing?
No, we don't know which, you know, we've never known labels. Or, you know, different kind of species. It's the only one that grows up here in the northern part.
Okay. Well, thank you.
And since there's 11 tribes in Wisconsin, everybody, almost all the natives eat that.
That is, I did not know that. Hazel, thank you.
Yeah, sometimes they put it with venison. In the old days, you would put it with venison, but nowadays we put it with sausage and potatoes and greens, like maybe the first onions coming up.
Sure.
Or the wild onions.
Yes.
You're making me hungry.
Oh, it's so wonderful. I had a group from Minneapolis, and they were called the Red Circle. They were a agency that promoted marketing it with pictures and videos.
Mm-hmm.
And they put together my cousins, my two older cousins, and we made a video. And then I fed them some milkweed soup and fry bread. And, oh, they just loved it.
Sounds great.
Hazel, thank you so much. I learned, you know, I learn something every day on the show, and I've certainly learned from you, Hazel. Thank you again very much for calling. I appreciate it. Want to remind you that we're listening and talking with Molly Fifield Murray, Outreach Programs Manager for the UW Arboretum. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Next Friday, I will be broadcasting from Bayfield, Wisconsin, from the Bayfield Pavilion. We're celebrating once again Bayfield in Bloom. I always have a wonderful time there. There's a great group of people. The Bayfield Pavilion is a great place to broadcast from. We always have a big crowd. There are vendors there. I pretty much every year go home with some flowers or whatever, and I have a wonderful time. So if you're in the Bayfield area, maybe you're Washburn or Bayfield, anywhere up there, next Friday, come by. The show obviously runs from 11 to 12:30, but come early. You can come at 10 or whatever and take a look at all of the various vendors who are there and sit in on the show. I'll be happy to talk with you in person, and that's next Friday in Bayfield from the Bayfield Pavilion. Bayfield in Bloom. I always look forward to that particular show. And I always look forward to having Molly Fifield Murray with us as well. She's here right now. Molly, you had a comment about edible plants, which plants are edible and which aren't, and some right. are, some are, some are, and some aren't.
Right. Well, and it was very nice of Hazel to share what the Native Americans eat up north. And if you understand that there are many species of milkweeds, mm-hmm. and they are not all as edible as the common one. And so you, the first thing when eating any wild plant is to make sure that it's the plant that you think it is. So
yeah.
make sure that it's the wild plant that somebody has taught you correctly, and that, you know, sometimes in the spring people like to go out in the woods and collect wild leeks called ramps, mm-hmm. but there are some things that look like ramps that are deadly poisonous, so you really need to know what you're doing. And of course, you can't pick things at the Arboretum because then that destroys the woodlands for other people. But if you have wild ramps that you've been encouraging on your own property, you know what they are and where they are, and you can buy them at the plant sale mm-hmm. that's on Saturday from 9 to 2.
Oh, ramps as well.
Ramps as well. Well, I did last year anyway.
All right. Lynn in Lake Forest, Illinois is up next with a question. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Larry, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And I certainly enjoy this program, Molly and Larry. It's a... right. Anyway, I'm very interested in wildflowers. And some years ago, I bought Epimedium, E-P-I-M-E-D-I-U-M, and Pulmonaria, P-U-L-M-O-N-A-R-I-A, also known, I think, as lungwort, and bloodroot. And they have come back year after year. They bloom after the crocuses and really early bulbs, but they do last a while, and they're one, they spread, and they're very adaptable, I'll say, because they adapt to sort of a woodland environment as well as in the open, and they survive in our clay, but they're so beautiful, and the Pulmonaria with its pink and blue blooms on the same plant, it spreads, and it's they both are like a almost like a ground cover in a way. But then the Epimedium gets these heart-shaped leaves after the flowers. It's like Forsythia, that it flowers first and then the leaves come out. And I really would, if they're native, I bought them with that understanding, and I am curious.
Well, actually, Pulmonaria is not native to Wisconsin or to the United States or North America. It's native to Europe and Western Asia. And one plant that has similar flowers and colors that is native is bluebells, Virginia bluebells. So it has...
Oh, is that the Mertensia? Virginia bluebells?
I'll have to look it up real quick.
I'll tell you why I ask is because we have those. Someone gave them to us very kindly many years ago, and they have spread, and they're beautiful. And yes, you're right. They have that variegated, coloring too. And then, but they really die back. When they die back, they die back. With the Pulmonaria, you have these what I call the spotted green leaves, low and kind of big, and they. So it's decorative in a way, you know, throughout the summer, at least, and into fall.
Sure. So Virginia bluebells is Mertensia.
Okay.
And it is ephemeral. So it lasts a little bit longer than toothwort or some of the other native ephemerals. And those are the ones that we mentioned earlier that are doing all of their growing before the leaves are heavy on the trees. But there are native wildflowers that also have interesting leaves that I would recommend, such as wild geranium and wild ginger.
We have both of those.
Yes. So your Pulmonaria might be okay, but I always worry about something that spreads readily.
Yeah,
and is
well,
not...
it doesn't spread all that readily.
Okay.
But it is contained. But I look for it, I guess, because I'm just so happy to see anything blooming at the spring.
Yeah, sure.
And they do withstand the early, the mid-spring with our rains and wind and so forth, because they're low to the ground, and they may droop, if it's frosty or whatever, but they'll come back.
Mm-hmm.
How about the epimedium? Is that a native?
I don't know that plant.
Okay.
Tell me what it is again.
It's spelled like the word medium with epi in front of it, like an EpiPen, you know.
Yeah.
Medium, M-E-D-I-U-M, with E-P-I in front of it. And it's not a ground cover. It's a low plant, however, and it spreads. And it's some have yellow flowers, some have sort of a rosy, deep, almost reddish shade to them. They've lasted a long time. The flowers come up first, like on a forsythia,
mm-hmm.
and then followed by the leaves. Ours are now mostly going into leaf, and the leaves are beautiful. They're heart-shaped, and the pinkish-red plants we have, the green heart-shaped leaf is sort of outlined in the rosy color.
Yes. So that is not a native plant either. It's from China and the Vietnam area. It has some poisonous and some fairly dangerous side effects. I would hesitate to have it in a yard that has young children. And once again, it's not native. A lot of people ask me sometimes about ground covers, and it's not typical for a native garden to have a single or even one or two ground covers, because the native woodland is more diverse than that. So frequently when people ask about ground covers, I would recommend planting a variety of native plants that will have a sequence of blooming times. Now, sometimes that's a little bit hard in a deep shade, but there are some woodland plants that do bloom later in the summer, or at least have interesting leaves, as well as ferns that have quite interesting leaves too. So I'm very careful about non-native plants. I love daffodils. And so I have daffodils at my place, and I planted a number of years ago something called Chiandoxa, which is glory of the snow or something. It's a beautiful blue plant, and it behaved itself for 20 years, and now it is going everywhere, and I really regret having it, because the trouble with including non-native plants is that they frequently do not provide ecological services that help the rest of the ecosystem. So, for instance, one of the most widely planted trees in the United States is Norway maple. It's very hardy. It provides no ecological services to the rest of the environment except for some photosynthesis in the leaves of the tree. It does not host any insects. And it does not have seed that anything eats. And a really good book for learning about this concept is Bringing Nature Home by Doug Tallamy. And he explains that, you know, it's not just enough to plant things that are beautiful to us. It's important to think about what that's providing to the rest of life. And he says, for instance, that, well, what parts of nature can we do without? None. There's no part of nature that we can do without. But when thinking about how to deal with nature, it's really important to think about how nature interacts with each other. Not quite as much fun as the deer and the turkey playing, but if you like butterflies, if you want things pollinated, if you want to be able to eat bee-pollinated fruit, we need to think about how our landscapes are contributing to the well-being of all of life. And if we don't, we're going to be in trouble, because if we don't have bumblebees, we won't have, almost 40% of the produce that you see on the shelf when you go to the grocery store is pollinated by bees. And we really need to understand our relationship to the rest of life.
Yeah, it was great comments. And Lynn, thank you so much for calling. I appreciate your call very much. Doug, you mentioned Doug Tallamy. Doug, I've interviewed Doug, a great guest, and some really thoughtful, thought-provoking ideas.
Yes, he has the science behind the art. that is native landscaping.
Yeah. Again, Lynn, thank you so much. We had Kel from Rhinelander with a question for you about birch. Kel, hi.
Hi, thank you. I live in a 100-year-old tiny old farmhouse at the end of a road near the woods. It's some fields here. And I have a beautiful old birch tree. And it's like a threesome. And I never see seeds. I always want to plant more birch trees. I never see seeds. Do they have male and female? Is that why I don't see seeds? Or are they just so tiny that I never notice them?
Well, I will look that up quickly, but it's nice that you have an old one because sometimes they don't survive.
Well, Kel's in kind of the right part of the state, I think, for it. Because
yes.
Rhinelander, if you're going to grow a birch tree, you probably could hardly pick a better location than Rhinelander. And you do see some very full, large birch trees in that area, and they are quite beautiful when they're that big. Definitely that beautiful. Well, we'll be looking that up, and we'll be thinking about that. I want to just remind that the plant sale Saturday from 9 to 2 at the Arboretum Visitor Center. There'll be native grasses, woodland prairie, and savanna plants. There'll be trees and shrubs. There's more than 100 species in total. And this is always a lot of fun. It's Mother's Day weekend, and every year it's on Mother's Day weekend. And Saturday from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. And Molly Fifield Murray will be there. Molly is, of course, the Outreach Programs Manager for the UW Arboretum in Madison, here for Garden Talk. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller. Happy to have you along today as we take a look at native plants on this edition of Garden Talk with Molly Fifield Murray, the Outreach Programs Manager at the UW Arboretum. Always like to have her on this particular week because it is the weekend of their native plant sale at the Arboretum. So tomorrow from 9 to 2, you're going to have a chance to purchase these large tents next to the Arboretum Visitor Center. You're going to have a chance to purchase over 100 species of woodland, prairie, savanna plants, trees, and shrubs. It's going to be wonderful. And great that she could be with us today to talk about the sale and to talk about native plants. If you have a question about some native plants that maybe you'd like to have either identified or maybe questions about what you might plant in your area, give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And again, Molly, welcome back. Always great to have you with us.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. We've had a lively discussion today. I did want to get back to Kel from Rhinelander that the birch tree does have male and female trees. Monisha said so hers must be a male if she's not seeing any seeds.
Oh, okay. So, but I guess you could, if you had a female, should be able to find a female.
Right. In Rhinelander.
In Rhinelander.
Should be able to find birch seeds.
And I wonder what you'd do with them. I suppose you'd have to, they probably need to be in the soil over winter.
Right. The best thing is to replicate a natural condition and put them in a soil over winter because it is in the northern hemisphere and that's what it needs.
Kellen Rhinelander had a follow-up question. What are the desirable conditions to grow turtle head?
Well, turtle head is a wildflower that likes wet feet and grows along the edge of a natural pond or a stream, and so it wouldn't want to dry out.
Okay, so don't let it dry out.
Right.
Email from Bill in Waukesha. We are in our third year of a prairie project converting most of our front yard. Seeding was done last year after a year of glyphosate. This year, some native plants have started. We live in the country, so neighbors aren't a problem. I could imagine a more urban, suburban site where the neighbors might object. You know, you have to realize this is at least 3 years after seeding to make the area more representative of the future. Do you have suggestions?
Well, he's very accurate that starting from seed is a slower way to get show. And so if you're in an urban situation, but you don't want to spend all the money you would need to plant everything by plants, I would plant showy things around the edge or where they're most visible. And even if I was planting, say, butterfly weed by seed, I'd stick in a few to sort of represent what's to come. And that would be the way to make it a little bit easier for the neighbors to accept.
Mm-hmm. And I know some people have actually made a very nice sign that they put right in the lawn. And
right.
People will stop and ask questions about it. And
sure.
There's usually a lot of interest.
Well, and you can get signs like that ready-made by the Wild Ones, the organization
wonderful.
That has headquarters in Wisconsin, so you could just contact the Wild Ones for that kind of sign.
Oh, that's a great idea. And I know from past experience from other people who have called and said, you know, we did this years ago now, and it wasn't long before, you know, the next-door neighbor had something going, and then the person down the street, and
yes.
Pretty soon there were a lot of people following suit.
Right. It is such a beautiful experience to see the variety of life that comes to the garden, both the plants that you've put in and then the things that come to visit the plants that you've put in.
Absolutely. Mary in Heartland, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for the call.
Sure.
Molly, I have a question. I have an autumn clematis. It's been in a couple years, but this year, at the end of winter, early spring, I cut it down to the ground, and I don't see any sign of it. Do you think I killed it?
Well, if you cut it below the growing point, that might be true. I don't know autumn clematis specifically. There is a native clematis, but autumn clematis, I don't know that specifically.
There's another name for it. It's always been in the books as a native.
Okay.
It blooms in fall and gets little white flowers.
Yeah, so that sounds like Virgin's Bower or the native.
That's the other name,
right.
Virgin's
okay,
Bower.
Sure. Well, you just, if you didn't...
It wasn't below the ground.
Okay, well, you might be okay. It might just take its time to come back up.
Well, I'll be patient then.
Yeah, be patient for a while anyway, Mary. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Sometimes, yeah, that's all you can do is just be a little patient.
Right. It's not the fastest growing. I mean, it will take over, and so you have to be careful where you plant it, but it's not. It doesn't jump out at you and grab your foot. So.
Email from Ann in Greendale says, I have a well-established prairie drop seed, little blue stem and Indian grasses, supporting a mixture of native flowers in an area about 65 feet by 25 feet. Nice area. I burned off the duff. Oh, did we talk about this already? And found a sizable live anthill, a sizable one, built up around the crown of a prairie drop seed plant. Do the ants damage or kill prairie plants or non-native plants for that matter? If so, should I be doing anything?
Well, there are ants that are native to the plant, to the prairie. In fact, Francis Hole, the famous soil scientist, said they were the first plowers of the prairie in some ways. At the Arboretum, we have a type of plant, Formica montana, that forms little mountains or dirt mounds that can be a couple feet in diameter and a foot or a foot and a half high and definitely go into the ground quite deep. They will prune the plants. I don't know that they'll necessarily kill it if it is that species. They will create a fascinating mound, and it's quite a city. The guy who was researching this at the Arboretum thought he was just the world's best researcher, because every time he dug into one of these mounds, he found a queen, and then one time he dug in and found seven queens and realized that it was a whole city, and they last for many, many, many years. There's another species of ant in the prairie that forms its mounds out of thatch, and it only lasts a couple of years. So it's sort of like the three little pigs. There's the the one that builds out of straw and the one that builds out of bricks. So the answer is I would leave it alone and just watch it in fascination myself.
I would too. And you mentioned Francis Hole, and I was on my run this morning. His home is, or his, where he lived and for many, many years, is just a block behind my home.
Okay.
And they have a plaque with a nice photo of Francis, and this is the Francis Hole home. He's a great guy.
Yeah.
One of a guy. David in Laval, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. I got a few questions. Prickly ash, we got what they call prickly ash up here. Does that affect the soil for the understory plants like the honeysuckle and buckthorn?
That's an interesting question. I don't know. Prickly ash does form clones or groups of plants. It's a native. It's important for the giant swallowtail butterfly. It's the larval host. But it's annoying to many people.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it has a toxin in its roots or not.
I took out a section, and I left the other section because I was not sure of its desirability. And other plants started to come up then, little white flowers and stuff. And so I've been experimenting up here in about an acre and a half. I planted prairie flowers mostly by seed and burning, and I'm getting some marginal success. Anyway, I got another question, another comment. Wild grape, I've seen it take over and almost kill an oak tree.
Yeah?
Yes. It doesn't do it by strangling the way bittersweet does, but it can just, any of those vines, I've seen woodbine climb a tree and then sort of spread out and basically shade it out, but it doesn't choke it to death like bittersweet does.
Yeah, I've cut several of them when I saw they were doing this. And then bluebells, how do they propagate? Do they do it by cloning or seed or both?
I'm going to say both.
Right.
You see them in big patches, which usually implies that there's some clonal properties to them. It also could mean you don't have the right kind of ants, which are dispersing the seed, and so the seed doesn't get dispersed.
And what about growing underneath pine trees? I've tried keeping it clean and throwing seed up there and then putting ferns there.
Well, that should work. Certain species should work if the pines are sort of in a natural formation. Sometimes they're planted too densely in plantations and not any light is getting through. But if you're in a natural pine forest or an uneven aged pine forest where there's some sunny openings. And you also get things like Canada Mayflower and some of those sort of more Northwoods wildflowers that can grow under pines and like the acidity of the pine soil.
Have you heard of world milkweed?
Yes.
We got some of that up here, quite a bit of it, really. Is that takeover stuff, the plant?
No, it will not take over. It's adapted to sandy soils, but it's sort of a delicate little thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. I let them be because I think, you know, they seem all right.
Well, and it's fun to see a giant monarch caterpillar that's eaten the entire plant because it's so small, but, you know, the mom planted the eggs right on the world milkweed and it ate it up.
I consider this area up here, I moved up here, and I consider it my experimental area. I just let things grow, and I see what happens.
That's great, yeah.
Good for you, David. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Oh, man. You can join in, too, 800-642-1234. Give a call. Jackie in Milwaukee. Hi, Jackie.
Good morning, afternoon. Autumn clematis. In the junk seed book, it says it's one of those you should cut back. Well, for 2 years, we cut it back, and it came back beautifully. And then I had a man taking care of my yard who was very reluctant to cut it back, but it will grow 15, 20 feet. It's wonderful for blocking out your neighbors, and you get all these lovely little white flowers late in the season. But this year, we're kind of watching it. It's starting to green up from the bottom, but it is one that you should cut back.
Yes.
According to Jung.
Yep.
Yes, you should cut it back, and I suspect that the previous caller's clematis will come eventually. And it is autumn clematis, so it must not be in any hurry.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
Thanks, Jackie.
Keep walking, Larry.
All right, I will. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Jackie often calls on many times on Garden Talk, so it's always great to hear her voice and know that she's still doing fine, too. We have Teresa in Minneapolis wonders, where do you get milkweed seeds or plants?
Well, the wild ones and Monarch Watch and some other have seeds available. All the native nurseries have milkweed seeds. There's quite a few varieties of milkweed. A very popular one right now is red milkweed, which I learned is marsh milkweed, but it's adaptable to garden soils. Asclepias incarnata, it's red. It's not a round ball shape like the common milkweed and is not as likely to spread vigorously as the common milkweed does. So I think any of the species, butterfly weed has a very deep taproot and is bright orange. That would be available at many, many kinds of garden stores.
David and Wanakee wondered how you'd transplant Jack in the Pulpit around your yard.
Well, it's a bulb. I would transplant it in the fall. If it's formed seeds, they're bright red. They're quite beautiful. The squirrels will move those around. But if you want to plant the seeds, you should extract them from the berries so that it doesn't get some complex chemical resistance to germinating, and put them out, scatter those around. It'll move around on its with the help of the squirrels, though.
Yeah, okay. And Facebook question from Christian. What are some ideas for partial shade native shrubs, let's say 2 to 3 feet, for a small garden bed along the front of a house?
Well, let's go back to the New Jersey tea. It gets about 2 to 3 feet tall, so that would be a good one. And then we talked about the dwarf bush honeysuckle, which is a little bit more shade tolerant. New Jersey tea is a savanna species and can be in full sun to partial shade. And then the dwarf bush honeysuckle is partial shade to fuller shade, more shade. They're very different looking plants. The New Jersey tea has white flowers that bloom in midsummer. It sometimes dies back on the top. You just have to prune it back a little bit, and it'll come back up. But it's not going to get more than knee-high.
Well, there we go. And available at the Native Plant Sale.
At the Native Plant Sale Saturday at the Arboretum, yes.
All right. So Saturday, once again, 9 to 2. I'd go early.
Yes.
If it was me, I'd be there early. Stephen Broadhead, your turn. Hi, Steve.
Hello. I've got a question. In my woods, the honeysuckle and buckthorn are choking out all my native plants,
yes.
The flowers and that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was going to try basil bark spraying, but how close can I spray them to oak trees and walnuts without getting, will it transfer into those roots?
If you're using some of the basil bark treatments you spray at any time, if you're just around the base of the bark, of the base of the trunk, I don't think it transfers to adjacent species.
Okay,
you have to don't do it on a windy day, but it's not going to transfer to the roots unless the roots are tied together, and that's probably not going to be true.
Okay, so I could actually cut them down and then just spray the stump then?
Well, actually, what people do is spray the stump while the plant is still alive and then cut them down later. So you could do it. It's harder to do with honeysuckle because of the multiple stems, but it's pretty easy to do with buckthorn.
Okay, because I tried pulling some out, and they pull out so much of the native soil in there that it's going to ruin the entire woods.
Right.
So I'm looking for the other option. The other option is a lot of work, too, but
yeah.
I'm trying to get my woods back.
Right.
Okay, I appreciate it.
Thanks. Yeah, good luck, Steve. Thanks a lot for calling. And Deb in Milwaukee, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Actually, where I'm going to be planting my things is brown deer, and I just want to say to the last caller who was inquiring about Jack in the Pulpit, I know where thousands of them are, and it will remain unnamed, but they have a lot of competition, but they really seem almost invasive, but I love them. But so I just wanted to say, it's almost wet, really wet soil. But my question is, I do not like the soil here, and it seems to be really invasive, and it's taking over. It's killed a cherry tree that I planted 20 years ago. It's killing pine trees, and it really breaks my heart because I love trees. But all of these roots that are packed in peat moss at Walmart recently, I mean, I bought about 40 of them. One of them is a bleeding heart, and I think it's dicentra, the Latin name, and I want to know where the best possible place for survival is to plant that bleeding heart.
Okay.
Well, bleeding heart's not a native, so I'll have to refer to where my mother planted it, and it did well, which was in partial shade on a partial slope, actually, in leaf mulch.
Oh, okay.
So I wouldn't put it, where the soil was real not broken up by or improved by organic matter.
Yeah, there you go. Good luck. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. I want to get back to the plant sale. Again, Molly, in the last couple minutes here, what about the plant sale?
Well, the plant sale is...
tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Yeah,
from 9 to 2, there's a large tent full of woodland, prairie, and wetland plants and trees and shrubs available right at the visitor center, which is in the middle of the arboretum. And over 100 species available. I think the plants I saw coming in looked wonderful. We get our plants from a variety of nurseries that are all experts at growing native plants. And it's quite lovely to see all the choices that people have.
Oh, it's really... What a great place to go. And frankly, also, it's going to be pretty. It's going to smell wonderful there.
Yes, the lilacs are right across the parking lot. You can come early and get a number and then go for a walk and then get back in later. So
good idea.
Yeah.
That's a very good idea. And there's I really every year look forward to the... Getting over, I get to the arboretum many times, the month of May is always a fun month for me because I love the lilacs and just the wonderful aromas.
And they have been there 80 years.
80 years.
80 years ago, April 16th, first lilacs were planted at the arboretum.
Well, you and I have a ways to go to get to 80 years.
Yes.
on the show here, but it's always a pleasure, Molly. Thank you so much.
Yes.
Appreciate it. Yeah, appreciate having you with us. Molly Fifield-Murray, Outreach Programs Manager for the UW Arboretum in Madison. And, of course, she'll be back, and we will work with her again, obviously. We'll talk some more about prairies. We have some good shows coming up for Monday on Monday's program. For one, we're going to learn how to choose sunglasses that give your eyes the protection they need. In the meantime, stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.